Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Expressing your love can look many different ways, and with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Welcome back to the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. We're brought to you by Yak Gadget. For all your kayak fishing accessory needs, go to YakGadget.com. Pelican cases, coolers, and lighting, go to Pelican.com. The 153 Bait Company. For all your hard and soft bait needs, go to the153anglers.com. Now let's get this show started.
What's going on, guys? Drew Gregory here. Jimmy, as you can see, is not to either side of me or above me or wherever he is in the screen usually, but I've got some really cool guests here today for the Paddle and Fin Reel Down. And I am pumped to talk to these guys about the Kayak Bass Fishing National Championship. It was a blast. And the guys I'm bringing on today, I'm telling you, this is going to be one you're going to want to listen to the entire way through, because there's going to be some funny stories and some good insight on the national championship that we just got back from and are finally caught up on sleep. So these guys were all in the house that I rented, the Airbnb house, and that's where a lot of the stories will come from, I'm sure. But they're good anglers. They all finished very highly. So let's bring on the crew here. Let's see who we're going to talk to. First off, we got Mr. Ken Morris. You guys all know Dr. Noisewater.
What's up, everybody? How you been?
Been good, man. Been good. Excited to talk about this championship here. Let's absolutely add these other characters in and let's see who they are here.
Oh, man, that guy's boring. Who else you got?
Yeah. Dusty Yacker. What's up, Dusty?
What's up? Good evening, y'all. Dusty Yacker here, a.k.a. Dustin Doom. Welcome back to the Yak. From the north, south, the east, and the west.
What? Are you reading that off a prompter? Dude, that was like
scripted. Out of here, man.
Scripted perfectly. Oh, Mr. Robert Weicker. What's up, man? What's up, champ?
What's going on? What's up, guys? As Dusty says, a.k.a. the fixer. If anything breaks down, I'm going to fix it for you.
That's right.
No doubt, man. Hey, I'm going to have to make sure you're included in every Airbnb rental for any tournament I go to. I might start comping your entry into your payment, your rent, whatever.
You should. I mean, I only charge $100 an hour to fix everything, yeah. So we're good.
Yeah, I'll comp your rent. You're my pit crew chief because I need one. Trust me. Gotcha. You guys, if you weren't, keeping up on social media, well, I didn't even post much on social media, but some people have probably heard the troubles I had. So thanks to Robert and all the guys at the house. We just had a great time and you helped me fix a lot of stuff. And we had Jason Lyall, Mike Fink, Tim Perkins, George Nemeth. We just had a really good house of guys. And that, to me, guys, this is a great way to kind of start into it. What I wanted to lead with, which is how cool the Kayak Bass Fishing National Championship is, that it's not like Chad said on the stage, he kind of wants to reiterate, because I think people are starting to say things like, this isn't a quote unquote the elite event. Like he said, it's not meant to be. This is more like a kayak fishing rodeo. You got all the elite anglers there, but it's also a time where we can all get together and have a lot of fun, rent a big house with a lot of guys, and just, man, I miss those times. I gotta admit, man, I probably fish better when I'm by myself and an Airbnb and actually get more sleep. But at the same time, man, the memories we made are priceless. So what are you guys' thoughts on the KBF National Championship, just as a whole? I guess we'll start over there with you, Ken. Why not? You're up top here on the screen. We'll start with you and move to Dusty and then Robert.
Gotcha. I think the event's a lot of fun. Like you mentioned, it's not necessarily a gauge of the because some people may have a good day and a couple good days or a spot or something. I mean, I don't know. Like, it's not a great – it's not the best gauge of the elite, but the elite are there. And you can definitely pull out your own measuring stick to see how you stand up against those guys, all the hammers. It gives you a chance to compete against them in a way that's a little bit different than the trail series. Plus, you know, they always pick destination areas to go fish, like – the Shreveport area has amazing fisheries around it, especially the ones we got to pick from. There's monster bass to fish for. You get to meet people, like if you end up in a house with Dusty Acker or the Fixer or anything like that. You get to meet people and make new friends and, like, you know, like kind of understand where different angles of how people approach this. Because I guarantee what I did was different than what Dusty did, that it was different from what Bobby did. Which, you know, is amazing that we can all, you know, stand around finishing that top 10% of that whole event. And we all are doing different stuff and we're not even evading each other's, like, you know, like, what are you throwing? This or that. We just, like, you know, it was just super cool. I don't have much else to say other than that. Like, it was really cool just to hang out with a bunch of, you know, old friends and make new friends and, you know, be fishing for a week straight for monsters. I mean, that's it. Who else can complain about that?
100%, man. I agree. Dusty, what about you, man? Some thoughts on the week there?
Yeah, you know, I think anytime you assemble that caliber of kayakers there, regardless of the qualification process, I think it's something special. I do think that cream rises to the top. I do think that you have to wade your way through some of the best to play this game. So, in that respect, it's very cool. And I also think that you know, whatever you like to say about KBF, they've done a wonderful job with kind of making that KBF NC their flagship event, and some wonderful promotion about it. I mean, we're not terribly far removed from $100,000 payouts, and you know, sort of how neat that was to elevate you know, our young sport. So it's a flagship event. It's very neat. I would never dream of missing it where it was at in Shreveport. Swamp is you know, I wrote about it in a post. It's otherworldly. It's such a special place to be. And I think it has like a unique pull to it. I think once you've been there, you want to hurry and get back to it. I would have loved to seen the championship scheduled in the spring. Speaking of that, so I'm real anxious to get to the KBF event next year. That's NCATO, I think, in March. But like Ken was saying, it's just a great time to celebrate our sport and celebrate what we're all doing. And celebrate, you know, all the potential it has for the future. And it was in a great place to do that. I had a ton of fun.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Bobby, Mr. Fix-It there.
Well, to me, the national championship, I always look forward to it because that's a reunion for me. I'm from Tennessee. I cut my teeth in the kayak fishing down in Tennessee, and then I moved to Ohio, and I have been here for 4.5 years. So when I go down there, I get to see all my buddies from Tennessee. I get to hang out with them. When I go down to the award ceremonies, I always tell my buddies that I'm with in the house because it's usually a local house. And I'm like, hey, listen, we're going to be at the awards for a long time. We got a lot of catching up to do. I haven't seen these guys in a year. So I love to go down there and just to, like I said, reunion. Like, I get to just see everybody that I grew in this sport around that I don't ever get to see anymore.
And yeah, absolutely, man.
Louisiana, having it down in Louisiana, I missed it. The year before last, I had a lot of things going on with business and stuff and couldn't get down there. And like Dusty said, in the spring, it wasn't on my hit list to go next year on my schedule. But now, absolutely. I can't wait to see what that place shows out for in the spring. So,
dude, it's awesome, man.
That's pretty much it for me. I'd love to go down there and just see everybody all over again.
Yeah, I mean, no doubt. That's where this check came from, in the spring. In the spring, Shreveport in the spring. That was my second place to Mike Elsie. It's awesome, man. It's definitely one to go to. So I'm going to bring up something that's pretty interesting, what you guys just said. The theme, to me, like, I celebrate the differences of the KBF National Championship, the TOC, the Bass, you know, Bass Nation Kayak Series Championship, all the major ones in our sport. I like that they're different. You know what I mean? People, like, want to get online and debate this or that. It's like, dude, I love the way this is, you know. It's like this big party reunion, like you guys just said, and you get to share, and you go back in the house with all the guys, you know, you get to share it in the successes or the miseries, which more often than not, there's like you know, a group of guys who either lost fish or things didn't go right, and you're kicking stuff, kicking cans, or just ticked off, you want to punch a wall, and you get to like laugh at each other and sort of like realize that it's not just you that had some stuff go wrong, and you know, and you get to pump each other up. It's like, it's, I like that, but I celebrate the differences. And I think that if you look at golf, my best analogy for what I'd love to see our sport turn into is four majors. We already got three. I think we need one more, but four, and equally spread out. So it gives enough time to build up right to each one. So in golf, you've got the Masters, which is run by just the Augusta National Golf Club. That's it. It's not run by the PGA Tour, the USGA. It's not run by the folks in Europe that run the British Open. And it's a total unique event held at the same course every year. It's something special about that, right? But then you got the PGA Championship run by the PGA. You got the US Open, which is run by the USGA. You got, you know, the Open Championship, which is run by the golf governing body in Europe. So they're all different. They're all unique. And you got this buildup. So what we have are three right now. And maybe, just maybe, that US Open that they got postponed this year, once it gets back up and going, maybe that can become another major, because they may have like a team component to it. You got the countries there and the whole, like, so maybe that could become the fourth one. I don't know, but I love it. I celebrate the fact they're all different. And I just had a good time hanging with you guys. And I know we're going to get into some of those stories, but anybody else have any other thoughts on it
Well, you know what, Drew, I mean, you touched on two like kind of different topics there, and I'm sure we'll get to both of them. You know, real briefly, you talked about the fact that we have, you know, different trails, different entities getting in this game. I think it's a reason to celebrate that we have enough space like that, with where attendance is very consistent, you know, spread out amongst these four, you know, trails. But while there are definitely reasons to celebrate, you know, some of the unique things that individually they bring, I think there's a lot of room for uniformity that I think there needs to be more of. And I know that we talked about this a little bit. So maybe we can touch on that a little bit later. But then you also talked about the different personalities in the house and the different reactions.
Oh, yeah.
So these are two great topics that we should table and definitely talk about. Specifically the characters and the personalities in the houses, because you know, Catch Out, not to make a shameless plug here, but Catch Outdoors has a video coming out soon featuring Cody Milton. And we didn't plan it this way, but I mean, he's obviously hyper hot, super relevant. We have a wonderful video coming out with him. But in the video, he touches on the fact that you learn a lot by seeing how guys react. You learn a lot by seeing how guys react in the heat of the moment. You see how you in fact, I think verbatim, he says, you see how guys handle themselves after, you know, where they're sitting after day one, you know, things like that. So it's super interesting to, like, you know, edit this video and see that so many times and recall our conversation on the boat and then see, you know, you know, to be able to analyze the antics of the individuals, including myself, you know, in the practice rounds and the days leading up to competition. And then, of course, in the competition. So,
yeah, absolutely. Dude, I don't know where you want to go. Where we want to go with that? There was two good topics there.
maybe we can each individually share our experiences about, you know, maybe a highlight or two, or a down light or two, a low light or what, if you will, about maybe like practice or the actual tournament. You know, maybe.
Yeah, let's do that. Well, let's all go around and say what place we finished, and then just a super quick little synopsis, I guess, of our tournament. And then before we even do that, though, I want to make sure we mention right off the bat, because it's still early in the podcast, we're 12 minutes in, you know, just obviously the winner was Guillermo Gonzalez, and big congratulations to Guillermo. I mean, just
totally.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well done. 3 days putting up, you know, averaging over 100 inches. I think you probably hit over 100. I don't have the leaderboard. Ken, maybe you can put your producer hat back on and even pull up that leaderboard in case we need it at some point. I don't know if we'll need it now, but in case we need it, you might even want to, or I was going to say you, or maybe Dusty later on, and might even have a little YouTube video you want to put up and show, if you want to get that queued back up for later.
Yeah. 100%. He averaged over 100 inches, because he had 103.5, 100.25, then 100. So,
so yeah, that's unreal. So congrats to Guillermo. Look, I mean, I don't know what to say about the guy. There's been so many good things posted about him, and you know, all over social media. I don't really know what's left to say. I mean, other than I've known Guillermo for a long time, he's one of the classiest, best guys. It's everything that you've seen written about him in the comments and on social media, it's all true. And like, ditto from me. I agree with it. He's an amazing guy, and never heard anybody say a bad thing about him. So for him to win it, I mean, it couldn't be a better champion for our sport, you know, for the next year. So, yeah, congrats to Guillermo and Cody for going second place, like Dusty said.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's not forget that he's coming off first place at the Hobie Pickwick.
Yes, that's right. So
these are incredible back-to-back wins, especially
back-to-back.
This most recent win. Let's give a shout out to Cody and to Matt too. These are, you know, three guys that work their tail off during the season, and I can speak closely to that because I was with them for a large portion of that, and I see what goes into these kinds of things. And you know, it's funny because you know, invariably, you know, posts start leaking out on social media, you know, that somehow want that, you know, in not in a malicious way, not in a way that's poor or bad, but just somehow in a way that wants to deduct or take away or reduce somehow the accomplishments, whether it's the sentiment of it's the same people at the top, or, you know, the idea that the sharing of information is somehow, you know, solicitous to just the people involved, and that there is no access to information other way, like things like that. And I just want to touch real quick on how I can speak, you know, to not only witnessing the type of good old fashioned, grueling, grinding, hard work it takes to do these things, not only witnessing that, but also taking part in that. Probably truly for the first time in my life when it comes to being able to attack kayak fishing full time, like literally not even going home, going from tournament to tournament on the road in different, you know, in different settings with different tackle requirements and all the other things that we have to deal with, as we know, as we'll probably talk about later.
It's hard,
that have nothing to do with the water and casting and fishing. So, so in that respect, it was great to see them win, and it was definitely the culmination of hard work, and absolutely not the result of, you know, some privileged niche or, you know, access to some whispering hole or something like that.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all within the rules. So until they change that rule, if they ever do, which, you know, Bassmaster and, you know, other major trails like that allow anglers to share information if they so choose. You know, so, you know, if it's within the rules, if you're not doing it or whatever, then that's just your decision not to do it. And if you want to do it, then that's your decision to do it. It's within the rules. So I got no issue with it. So let's go around.
Ken, that's a good topic, man.
No, it is a great topic. I could go on all these topics for
so long. We should go around and say our opinion on that, like whether you think that's cool or not, man.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah, go for it. Yeah, go, Robert.
I mean, if you really think about it.
Yeah, what do you think, man?
When we first moved into the house, we were all pretty tight-lipped. Everybody had a practice. Totally. And we would get back from practice and be like, well, I only caught three or somebody caught five. But then if you really lay it out there. So after day one of the tournament, Ken told me exactly what he was doing, what he caught him on, everything. And I told him what I was doing. See, I told you what I was doing, how I was catching them. Drew the same thing. So we all went from practicing and kind of doing our own little yada yada, but then once things really got down nitty gritty, we're not a team here. Like, you guys were on motor guide, I was on blue canoe, Dusty was on catch,
totally.
But we developed that bond, and we were together. We all wanted to see each other do great. So then you look at Cody Milton and the guys he's running with. They've been out here for 7, 8, 9, 10 days in a row, grinding on the same lake, working together. But maybe they weren't working together. Who knows? But still, you develop that bond with each other. And I developed the trust with all of you guys. Like, hey, Ken, you're catching them on this. Well, here's what I'm doing. And I told Ken, I said, hey, I'd be fan casting, doing whatever you're doing. He's already doing what I told him I would advise him to do. But, I mean, whenever you get in that situation, I wanted to see Dusty win first place. I'm just as bad as he wanted the rest of us to win. Like, it was like, that's just the way we do things. That's us as humans.
Yeah. Or you can, there's a lot of empathy involved, is what I'm trying to say. And as much as you are striving for your own individual goals, and of course it's a competition and it's individual, and we all have that selfish desire to win. You know what it's like to have that, and to be able to, you know, put yourself in someone else's shoes is super easy.
For sure.
And the more you can do that, the healthier it is and the nicer it is
as
a nice cushion for the competition. Because what he's talking about is a neat thing that we kind of did, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
I've seen the polar opposite.
Yeah.
I don't want to live with the guys that I want to cut their throat. I want to be in the house with the guys that I want to see everybody do good.
Well, the best thing about it was Drew's email before we even got to the house. he addressed a lot of realities of what, you know, of the rental house, but then he kind of went above and beyond and like literally typed out how, you know, we're with a new group of guys, and he prefaced how everybody's not comfortable sometimes sharing where they were, what was working or what wasn't working, and that, you know, maybe direct questioning or, you know, it might make people uncomfortable. Yeah. What he was saying was absolutely accurate, but just the fact that it was in writing.
Yeah.
I love that email.
It's so hilarious.
I love that email. I think that email put us all right where we needed to be.
Yeah, totally.
And we all felt each other out as the week went on and realized where we stand. So
Absolutely. Yeah. Ken, what about you, man? What do you think about this sharing of information and teaming up and all that and privileged clicks or whatever? If that's what, I don't even know what the chatter is, but Dusty just kind of filled us in.
Yeah, I don't.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
I don't have a problem with it because in the sense of like, you know, it's like, okay, so you look at like high school or college basketball or this or that, like coaches share films all the time. You know what I mean? Like they record their own games and they share a film with a different team to get a film from them of another team. So like the sharing the information and the, you know, that sort of stuff, the fact of the matter is you have to go out, you have to have your lures and your rods and your reels ready. You have to hit the spots to at the right time, be at the right place at the right time with the right lure to actually make that happen. I think I could have talked to Guillermo for probably 72 hours and I wouldn't put up 100 inches in one day. You know what I mean? Like, just because I don't, and the fact, and you know, I may not fish the same way as him, or you know, what he, the pattern within the pattern that he figured out, he's still not going to tell me. You know what I mean? I just think people read into it too much. They think getting that information makes it easy. It's still not easy. You can give me all the information in the world and it's still not easy.
You still got to catch them.
Right.
Yeah. You still got to get out there and catch them. So,
you know, if you're really passionate and your true interest lies in being the best competitor you can be, you would not be typing about who's talking to who. You wouldn't be typing about who's got this many days of practice or who has this much time. What you'd be doing is figuring out what it takes to get down there and fish. Yeah. You'd be too busy practicing yourself. You'd be too busy going through the hard work and all the crazy minutiae that you have to do in order to get through day one, day two, and day three and be successful somehow, or even get down there, period. Yeah. Whether you have tons of time, whether you have a little time. With all due respect to people's individual circumstances and situations, which commands respect because the people, father to 4 and 5 freaking kids working full-time jobs and then coming down there and just acting like a class act and just being a wonderful human beings. And then there's people like me who's got all the time in the world, you know, all the time in the world to go down there and practice for 10 days and whatnot. But regardless of those individual circumstances, the bottom line, like we all say, is it takes the work, it takes the hustle, it takes the grind, it takes going down there and casting and figuring it out and figuring things out.
For sure. Well, first of all, guys, I was catching 20s all during pre-fishing. Sorry. I was. But, I didn't quite, like everyone said, you're kind of holding things a little bit tight to the
I told you guys, I literally caught 2 fish every day during.
I didn't catch 20 the whole time we were there.
My practice was as brutal as I told you, and I was very concerned about it. And I lost a 7-pounder. I mean, I lost one big, but it was a random 1-bite thing. And like Robert said, I think the biggest one I caught in practice was maybe 18 and a half or maybe 18 and 3/4. And I had little expectations, which actually worked. It worked wonders to like the typical anxiety or easy doom and gloom mentality that comes when things start slipping away or when they just don't work your way, instead of grinding through with a positive mentality. So kind of having no expectations was like sort of the catalyst for me to just be loose as heck, for me to just feel super loose, comfortable, and carefree. And that translated into fishing. Yeah. And that translated into fishing way smarter and better. And I think, for example,
fishing didn't pay you into a corner.
Well, for example, I was throwing that buzz bait, and 25, 35 minutes into it, I didn't have one bite. And had I been, you know, like impending doom, the wheel starts spinning, I might have started picking up two or three things and started maybe retying. Instead, I was so calm and I just kept firing that buzz bait. Bam, 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 bam.
So calm, yeah, calm, loose, and carefree. Do you think that's the way the guys in the house would describe your personality over the last week?
Calm and carefree was what you heard in the swamp?
No, but I'm telling you, man.
I hear you, though. I hear you.
After day two and day three, probably not, you know, with some losses there. But, at the launch, I mean, if you saw me there, I mean, with the guys that saw me, we were just joking and laughing. I mean, I was falling asleep.
Yeah, no.
What about that parking spot?
Well, yeah, I mean, you had – I was a mile from the launch ramp, and I had to get there at, like, 2:30 or 2:45 a.m. just to get a parking spot. So I wind up, like, sleeping in my car there. And then, of course, I get blocked in by a guy that's – you know, it doesn't seem to really care that he did that.
Dude, I love the fact that you came away from day one with like 91 inches sitting in like 27th place. Did you have 91 on day one, 92?
I had 90 and a half, yeah.
90 and a half. So, and you were just, your demeanor, and you were just ticked off, fired up, like not happy with, not like solely happy. You were like, I'm saying it's a compliment. I love that. And I was like, I'm thinking when I ask you how many inches you had, you're going to say like 83, you know what I mean? And you're like 90 and a half. Ooh, cool. I'm here to win. I love it, dude. I love that fire, dude. I loved it. I loved it. I don't change a thing. I agree. But I'll answer that question before we move on in some other rabbit hole. But so here's my answer to that question is I do not like the fact that we can share information, but there's also no better solution. You see what I'm saying? Like if you say no information being shared and you get everyone's living in the houses and doing that, then someone's going to share information and break the rules. It's impossible to, so you might as well let anglers share information. Right.
Yeah.
So because there's no better way to police it, then I think it's the best it can be right now. Okay. But the bigger issue and long-term big 10,000 foot view for kayak fishing is what you just said, Dusty, is in kayak fishing now that these entities, KBF and all these trails, what they need is people going to locations. They need numbers, right? Entries tend to, will at some point decline from the family man with two, three kids. He works and he only gets a day to pre-fish. When he continues to see and hear the stories and see the results of the guys that have more of the time that are there for, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10 days pre-fishing, will lose that angler. And the entries will kind of dip because it's like, why am I going to keep throwing my money away to these guys? I can't compete because they're just camping there for 7, 8, 9 days. And again, it's not against the rules. So I got no problem with it. Cody's one of my best friends and Guillermo is too. They all are. And I, you know, if I can get away like you and fish for 4 or 5 days, you know, I do too. But I think that's our bigger issue in the sport, because I think you're going to start seeing a lot of those guys not entering the events if this continues to be a trend. And there's rules in every, you know, like major like bass boat trail about how many days you can be on the water pre-fishing. Usually it's like 3 days they get. MLF hardly gets any days.
Well,
I got a solution for it. If it could be a win-win for everybody.
I'd love to hear that. And I'm sorry to interrupt you. So maybe you should talk about that. But maybe I'm jumping the gun here, like 2, 3, or 4, or 5 steps, or even those kinds of years. But you know, wouldn't it be great that it's realistic for people to jump into the kayak scene full time because the money is there? Wouldn't it be great for a person, you know, for more people to be able to realistically entertain these things, because you know mid-level and major sponsors are putting behind money and you know, perhaps talk about some of the necessities to get to that level, 100%. so that it is realistic for somebody who maybe isn't happy at their job, that has a child or two,
right,
to be like, you know what, this would
or
make
four
me
Yeah, for like this guy.
I mean, it was only realistic for me to quit my job because I don't have any children. It was only fair. Yeah. It was only fair and legitimate for me to do it because of that. Otherwise, it might not have been terribly realistic, and I might have put people in a bind.
But, yeah, for sure.
But without that, it's just complete, like, let's F and go, you know?
Yeah, absolutely, dude. So you're saying, Cody, go have some kids, man. Guillermo, go have some kids already, dude. Come on, guys. Come on, man. No, but
yeah, you guys they better hope they find a super wife like mine where they can have four kids and get away for a week every tournament just because she's freaking awesome.
Dude, yeah. She is a super wife. There, a big shout out to Mrs. Weicker over there. Seriously, that's amazing. But Dusty, 100%, you're right. And if there is a full-time elite series of kayak anglers, then it's safe to assume there will be a pre-fishing rule, just like the pro series of bass boats. Yeah, so why is there not now when actually it probably needs it more now? Because here's the deal. Okay, think about it.
That gets back to the uniformity. I mean, there's four wildly different entities that are not at all
right
cohesive.
Yeah, no doubt. And that, well, they can't control it because we're not doing it full time. There's not 80 of us in some elite series doing it full time. They can't control. We all have different schedules, so they can't say you can only fish the 3 days before the tournament, right? Yeah. They can't. There's no way. Then you would actually lose more people.
Yeah.
The only solution, and I'll tell you this too. I've actually pitched this last year online, and I've talked about it with Cody and Christine and other people. The only solution that's a win-win for everybody is if you limit the pre-fishing to like 2 weeks before a tournament, right? I'm just saying 2 weeks, could be 3 weeks, could be whatever. But you let each angler have whatever it is, 4 days on the water maximum. They can pick which four. So you start it the weekend, 2 weekends prior, the Friday. Sure. So there's a weekend. So if someone's like an hour and a half away or 2 hours, they don't even have to miss work. They can go and take 2 days there, 2 days the next one. So essentially you've got – and then you've got the Friday before. They could take off maybe the Friday before if they want to pre-fish the day before just to check their stuff. And they get to choose which days they want to pre-fish. Now, if you've got the time and you're like you, like you're saying, or like myself, like I like to do, or the Cody, the Guillermos, Christine's, you would choose probably the 4 days right before the tournament in a row. Yeah. You see what I'm saying? To get the most current information. But let's say you're a guy that's got like a Matt Ball. He's got kids. He's got a full-time job. And you know, at very minimum, if let's say someone fishes for four, the number's 4 days, right? The maximum number is 4 days you can pre-fish in a two-week window before the tournament. You know, if you only have a chance to fish, pre-fish two or two and a half or three, at very minimum, you're only losing 1 day to any of these sticks. So you feel like, oh, I can enter that because I'm not really – they're not really getting some, you know, 7-8 day advantage over me just camping. Now, here's the great thing about this theory and the strategy and how to do that. First of all, I know people out there are going to say, how do you police that? Well, dude, how do you police someone from keeping fish on stringers out in the lake right now and just putting them on their catch board, right? You can't. At some point, it's definitely an honor system. And I feel like our sport is pretty darn honorable, honestly.
I feel like it is.
So that's the first thing people are going to say. That'd be my answer to that. The other thing would be where was I going with that? The train of thought. I just lost it. I was talking about 4 days, right, of pre-fishing. Yeah. And then it's going to come to me in 2 seconds. But
you blew a gas.
I blew a gas, but I'm back on track. Okay, so now you're going to say, well, why would a Dusty Yak or Christine or – yeah, Robert fix it already. That was how fast he fixed it. Why would Cody and Guillermo and Christine and Josh Stewart and Russ or whoever has the time, include myself in that, who can sometimes get away for many days beforehand, why would they want that rule? Why would they want that in place where they can camp for 7, 8, 9, 10 days now? And I'm going to tell you right now why. Because you cannot make a living on simply earnings in kayak fishing right now. You literally have to just be the whatever the top three worth the national championship or the winner of the TOC. Totally. Or win like four events. I mean, really, even adding four Hobie events, if you won $6,000 each, that's not a living. So how do you make a living? Sponsors. You need to get a little cash from sponsors to help supplement all that, right? So and how do you do that? What do sponsors want? They want content. You can't develop content. You can't be editing videos if you know somebody else is going to get more days on the water than you because there's no limit. So it's like Michael Jordan always used to say, like, somebody else is out there practicing longer and harder than me, so I got to be out there. Exactly. Well, not if there's a rule that says that. Now you can spend that time on the business development side, because it's not easy to put media kits together and send it to sponsors and talk to them about things. And then get the content, the pictures, photos, and videos, and get the content back to them to use and continue to give them what they're looking for. But if you had a limit on the number of days you could be pre-fishing, it would actually, and Cody and all the, I think Christine was the same way. Everybody was like, dude, that really would take this burden off of our shoulders. Like, oh my God, I don't have to be out here for 7, 8, or 9 days.
I don't know, man. I think 3 or 4 days is perfect anyway.
That's plenty. Yeah, I agree.
I mean, that's, I don't really want any more days. I could have went to Bistineau. I could have been right down there and spent 3 or 4 days comfortably at Bistineau, staying with Jamie's, staying at Jamie's, you know, and been down there for 10 or 11 days if I really wanted to, but I did not want to. I wanted, like, you know, four and a half days, and, you know, that's kind of like the perfect window.
I don't think I could go out and fish after pre-fishing for 10 days.
Dude, seriously. I was so beat as it was.
I'm like 100%. I'm 100% opposite on it, I guess. I think if you've got the time, you use it. I mean, I fished the FLW Coasters for a full season. I fished 3 tournaments in New York. I spent 45 days on the water, pretty much 45 consecutive days. I had 11 days of practice, 12 days of practice, 3 days of tournaments. And I'm just me personally, I'm not a fan of practice cutoffs. I think if you've got the time, good for you.
It's
a blessing. If you don't have to.
Oh, 100%.
So if you can go practice for 25 days in a row and you can be a world champion because you got 15 or 20 days on the water before every tournament and you're willing to work that hard and you want to put yourself through that, good job.
Yeah, no, 100%.
I mean, that's just me. I mean, I think
I hate
practice cutoffs. We happen here on our local river, and that's all you hear is people raising Cain about how I couldn't practice for this and this and this, but whatever. I think it's, if you've got the time, if you've made that lifestyle, if you've made those choices in life where you can do it, then do it. Get after it.
Yeah. So. No. I have no issue with, if you have the time and it's within the rules, do it. You should. But what I'm saying, in kayak fishing, you can't make a living just in tournament winning. So you're going to be spinning your wheels, wasting time, and you're never going to be able to make a living unless you develop those sponsor relationships, which take time.
For sure.
And because somebody else has the ability to, like you said, if they have the time, they're going to be out there 15, 20 days, 7 days, whatever. You're not going to win. Sometimes you can, but your odds can for sure are lessened if you're competing against people that are learning it for a longer period of time. So that's my only, point on that is, we just are trying to get more. If people are trying to do it for a living, they actually need to do the other stuff more importantly than
practice envy is a real thing.
Expressing your love can look many different ways. And with the right jewelry gift from Blue Nile, it can truly sparkle. Blue Nile's collection of classic diamond jewelry makes for the kind of gift that speaks volumes without saying a single word. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, Blue Nile's diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, for sure. That's a good topic. So just real quick then, so let's go over what place everyone ended up, and then just give us a very short, because I know we have a lot more we want to talk about, a short synopsis on kind of what you caught your fish on, what your pattern was, not like a walkthrough, day one this, day two, day, you know. So Ken, do you want to start us off, man?
Sure. I finished overall in 23rd place. So I was really happy about that. I was proud of the fact that I was able to make it up to 23rd. And basically, like I had briefly mentioned before, my practice wasn't great. I only caught like 2 fish a day, but those 2 fish a day gave me a lot of information on what's going on. And then I found a topwater bite that wasn't necessarily true to its fashion, but it was working. And when it got hit by a big fish. So like, I'm talking a big fish, like 17 plus 90% of the time. So it was really out of my comfort zone to commit to that bite, in the sense of fear and anxiety of not catching a limit every day. I only got five to eight bites a day, but I committed to that bite, that topwater bite that I was working on, and I just laid all the chips down trying to put up big stringers with that bite, and it worked out. So I was extremely uncomfortable. The whole day I was thinking about, I need to catch more fish, I need to catch more fish, but I just kept firing casts out there and working it and knowing that when I got hit, I had to seize opportunity and get the hooks in them because it was going to be a big fish. So right. I think I was able to put up 91.75 for the first day, 85 the second day, had a little bit of a dip, couldn't get a big bite going or lots of bites going. I caught five fish and that was it. And then day three, I skyrocketed right back up and put 93.25 down, and it was good enough to land me 23rd place. So, I mean, that's the quickest synopsis I think that I could put together for what was going on. You know, if you want to be a fly on the wall when Bobby and I are talking about it, you'd probably get a lot more details, but that's pretty much it.
All right, Dusty, what you got? What place did you end up? And tell us real quickly how you caught them.
I ended up 18th place overall and 10th place in the Challenge Series, 12th place in the Trail Series. And I did have a bad practice. There wasn't really any definitive pattern. I pretty much throughout day one, day two, day three, caught the majority of my bigger fish on a dark buzzbait, a Nichols buzzbait, and a shower blow, a topwater walker. And I pretty much alternated between those two and got the majority of my fish on the buzzbait and picked up a few key kickers on the shower blow and covered water and fished the 60 or 70 trees that I marked and some general areas where I tended to find the fish. Nothing really came about in practice. I just had faith in topwaters and knew that it was just a matter of covering water. That's what I did. And I almost finished a lot higher, but you got to get him in the boat. And, yep. You know, it's just been crushing me lately, not being able to get some crucial clutch fish late in the game and late in the tournaments in the boat. So we got to fix that for next year.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the fixer is right there. So let's, you know, maybe he can help you out with that. Tell us,
nice segue.
Yeah, that was a good segue. This is not my first rodeo, man. Come on. Hey, Bobby, what you got, man? Tell us a little bit about your event, where you placed, and how you caught them.
I finished 34th in the national championship, the last spot in the top 10%. And I finished nice. 21st in the trail series, 22nd in the challenge series, I think. And everybody that knows me knows that I don't want to fish targets that you can see. I want to fish offshore. I want to fish schools. I want to find that kind of thing. And I practiced pretty hard 2.5 days. I had nothing, and I was pretty spun out after 2.5 days. I was pretty miserable because I expected to go to Louisiana looking for schools of giants, not just five keepers. And then we made a decision. We pulled an audible. We went up to a different lake. We went a long ways to get there, and I found a mega. I found a school of fish, and I found a school that I didn't think was going to be the winning school. But I was in 9th in the AOI standings. My goal coming into this tournament was to be in the 10 house. I didn't care about the national championship. It didn't matter. None of the championships mattered. I wanted to make the 10 house. My prediction, I needed 90 inches to make the 10 house per day. Little did I know, I ended up day one with 89.75, day two with 89.75, and I missed the 10 house by an inch and a half. So jeez. My figures weren't far off, but they were far enough off that I didn't make it. So I probably caught 100 keepers in the tournament. I threw a spinnerbait nonstop the entire time. I used panoptics to find my schools of fish. And it was, and I told these guys in the house, I said, the first day having panoptics, I wanted to sell it. The second day, it was the best tool I ever had in my life. Once I narrowed it down, figured out how to use it, it was definitely a key to my success because I could watch the schools, I could watch the fish, see how they reacted, and then throw on them and catch them. If you look at my profile on Facebook, you'll see some panoptics videos that are pretty cool. But
nice.
So 34th, I mean, I had a great time. Caught tons and tons and tons and tons of fish, tons of keepers. And that's pretty nice, much man. It. It was just kind of – I honestly set my goal for mediocrity, I guess, not to catch giants, just to catch enough to make it in. Hindsight, I should have threw a little bit harder, went a little bit for more bigger fish, but I was on that school I knew it was in them, and I knew it was going to be 90 inches, around 90 a day. So I settled for that, and we ended up where we ended up.
So close, man. So close. Yeah. So I've got a very similar story, you know, being very close to the 10 house, but not quite there. I finished in, I think, 29th place. So, you know, cashed a check, can't complain. I've got a streak of checks. I should actually go look back. It's pretty lengthy. So I'm proud of that, the consistency, but it was rough. You know, as you guys know, you were in the house, you saw, on day one, I was in seventh place, had 98 inches. They updated the AOI standings. I'm in first place in the AOI. I mean, it's like my AOI to lose, forget 10 house. It was like, kind of like I was leading. So, and I was on fish. I was feeling good about it. I was punching fish, and not a lot of people were doing that, punching them up with an ounce and a half. Using a Z-Man goats. I did catch one big one on a spinnerbait, so I had a little bit of that spinnerbait going and some on the chatterbait, but my bigger bites were coming punching. So anyway, that was day one, and at the very end of day one, a series of events sort of just hit me. I dropped my phone in the water, and I should have had it tethered, so it's like it's my fault, you know? And after 30, 45 minutes of looking for it in 3.5 feet of water in the swamp, I found it. Everything worked on it, so no problem. My photos were in for that day, so no big deal. I just lost 20 minutes of fishing time at the end. And as you guys saw, about 7 or 8 p.m. that night, I get a message on my phone saying I can no longer use cellular data. So now I don't have a phone, and I'm scrambling, and my motor was kind of acting funny at the end of day one. And so now I don't know if I'm going to have a motor on day two, a phone, and what's going to happen. And sure enough, man, it was like obviously not God's will for me to be in the 10 house or win the AOI. And day two, my motor 15 minutes in blew up. It literally just sparks smoke. It glowed orange in the dark, guys. It was glowing orange. There was a fire inside my motor. I got that white motor guide head. So
that's scary.
It was funny because it was glowing orange. Yeah, it was very scary. And I just turned it off and never used it, paddled the rest of the day. And it's actually a crazy story. I hooked it up at the end of the day, and it worked. I think it melted the wires, and I think it created a new where it was shortened out. I think it created a new seal, so it actually worked at the end of the day for a little bit, but was still acting funny. Anyway, I say all that just to, you know, I was up the creek without a motor, but I was in the big solo skiff. It was heavy. I had, you know, two batteries, the motor, and I had to paddle that thing around in an area that wasn't necessarily where I wanted to be or go. I had multiple places I could have run to. So it cost me big time, cost me the 10 house, cost me, you know, but like we talked about before, you get to see people's reactions, and I'm sure you guys could see I was frustrated and ticked off, but yeah. I mean, at the same time, I just had to, what are you going to do? You know what I mean? Like, just, I don't know. But anyway, I had 78.5 inches, and then I came back on day three. Spinnerbait caught my big fish, and I caught a 22.5 incher, but I came back on day three with just a paddle kayak, used a little Crescent ultralight 10 footer, and went up some bayous, some creeks, and a different lake, a couple different ones, and some new water at the beginning of the day, and just found some fish, you know, 17, 18 inch fish, and then caught it that 22.5 at a different spot I moved to in a swamp where I just dredged through the swamp and had to even pull my kayak around. Yeah. It was nuts. For you guys there that have followed me on social media, you may remember in Kissimmee, Florida, when this trail series started, I was hiking my kayak through a swamp. Literally, I got stuck because the hyacinth choked it out. And that's how I finished my year. I was hiking it through a swamp, and it was pretty much a maze. But I did find a 22.5 in there and ended up getting 90. What did I have? 92 on the last day. So I went 98, 78.5, and 92 to end up in 29th place. But anyway, that was my tournament. So I can't complain because I still got a check. You know, I was definitely very frustrated. But, you know, Ken and I talked as well. And obviously, it's, you know, we got this newborn coming. And she'll be a month old during the time of the 10 house. So I think it was just God's will for me to be here and maybe be here with her. I'm not saying I'm still going to try to talk to the in-laws and the wife and see how things are going and be like, hey, you know, the Invitational is that time. Maybe I could fly down real quick. Maybe Ken or Robert, one of you guys that live nearby, you can take one of my kayaks, and maybe I could just fly in, just fish it, and then fly right back. I don't know. We'll see if I get a
break. I'll have room on the trailer.
Yeah. Right. So I got to say, though, guys, like, I don't know how many of you, if any of you, have spent any time with Drew, but he is one of the most glass-half-full positive people you can be around. Like, everything's going to work out somehow, yeah. Like, sort of person. And after day two was the closest I've ever seen that man just to like be the angriest person and like upset and like the world was burning I've ever seen him. So, like, it was real, real serious there for a bit with him. But, you know, we got him to bounce back and get out there and readjust himself and then slam it on day three and get right back up in there to cash a check and recover from that. And that's what really shows the grit of some of these people out here is that adversity they can get through to continue to go out and fish and not just, like, throw the rods in the truck and call it a day.
That's right.
You just got to look at those problems and think, I can fix them.
Yeah,
I got a roommate who can.
Yeah, that's right. I just honestly, I just literally could not believe the calamities that kept happening. I mean, I got pulled over by the cops that morning for my running lights because they were kind of like my. I had a short in my trailer lights, and of course, a cop pulls right in between Ken and I and pulls me over. I'm like, dude, I've got three phones. I don't know what's going on with my phones or which one has signal. I'm switching out SIM cards. I'm using some backup phone that George Nemeth gave me, and it's like this big. It's an iPhone 6. It's like the Zoolander phone. It's so small, and I can't. I have to type some complex password because it was his work phone. They make him put in a complex password every time to see Google Maps. It was like nothing, you know, was going right. But anyway, I don't want to go on and on about that, even though I know it's a funny story, whatever. And you guys have already heard it all, but it is what it is, guys. It was not meant to be, and I just was just shocked that all that kept happening because I was on him. Yeah,
let's do this. That was a really like in-depth story about Drew. If they want to, or if they have something like that, what is the most adverse or the difficult thing that you guys had to go through for this tournament?
I almost sunk my boat.
That's right. See, I'm not alone.
I've had some bad experiences on the water, so I put a bilge pump in every kayak I've ever owned. Since I almost sunk one at one time, we won't say brands or names or nothing, but I was on some serious fish one time to win a tournament, and then all of a sudden my graph just shut off. And I noticed my boat started listing real bad, and I was like, crap. So I opened the hatch, it's full of water. I was like, why am I full of water? It's not going to happen to me again. So I put a bilge pump in every kayak I've owned since, which is four kayaks. Well, I put a bilge pump in my new one.
Oh, jeez.
And I adjusted some weight the day before the tournament. It was day two of the tournament. I adjusted some weight and made some things a little heavier toward the back. And I'm running, and all of a sudden I lean, and my boat's about to flip. And I was like, what the heck? Good thing is we pass our house on the way to our spot. So my buddy's behind me, and I was like, hey, man, I'm going to pull over to our dock. I'm going to grab my kayak. I'm going to yank it up on the dock. I was leaking water through the bilge pump hole that's supposed to keep water out.
Oh,
little
my
did I know, goodness. Bilge pumps don't come with a check valve. They don't. I thought they did.
Yeah.
So 20 gallons in, 20 gallons out. Well, it means 20 gallons back in. So yeah, on day two, I thought I was toast. So my buddy Fink, being the great dude that he is, I've got to pull my motor up to paddle a mile and a half through a creek. What is it, Dusty? Mile and a quarter through that creek.
1.5.
Yeah, 1 mile and a half through a creek, but I can't go to the front of my kayak because if I do, then all the water is going to go to the front with the weight of my motor. I'm going to do a front flip. So jeez. I hollered at Faith, and I was like, dude, you got to yank my motor up for me. And he's like, I got you. He yanks my motor up, and I can feel the water as soon as he does go all the way to the back. Bill's pump kicks on, pumps out 10 gallons of water. I start paddling through, and I fish all day long with a boat completely full of water. Every step. Every movement, everything, like if you lean your hips a little bit, it's fine. And then 2 seconds later, you're leaning way farther than you ever expected. So I fought it the entire day two.
Man.
But it wasn't the manufacturer's fault. It was 100% my fault because I put a bilge pump in thinking that they have a check valve. You would think they would. I would tell you what, tomorrow, mine's going to have a check valve.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
We'll fix it.
Again. So it's my fault, but. I mean, you talk about being a little nervous. I don't want to sink my boat in gator moccasin water.
No, dude, I can't.
Miles from the closest dry land ever.
I keep Gorilla tape with me in a dry bag. I always have Gorilla tape with me because I have, back in the old days, my first kayak was an ocean kayak, and they're kind of, you know, lightweight, thin, you know, thinly molded, which is fine when you're in the ocean. But, you know, when you're doing rocky rivers. So anyway, I've repaired some with Gorilla tape before, and they've held up just fine for a long time. So I always keep Gorilla tape in the old dry bag, as well as some other emergency supplies in my angler aid kit. Dusty, what about you? Anything? What's the most adverse?
Well,
you know, I think what we're talking about here in general and what we're touching on, regardless of like what we're individually going through, is the fact that this sport and like what we do in like these tournaments, especially these big stage 3-day ones, I've never seen more things go wrong. There's just this uncanny nature of like things that could simply go wrong. Yeah. In these events, and everybody has stories like that, from real wild stuff to real simple stuff. A few examples for me this week. I remember on the first day of practice, I was on the main lake in Caddo, and it was running late, and my graph was on the second day of its battery, and I did not know how long it had to go, and I was kind of far from the launch and couldn't somehow get back. It's like my maps weren't guiding me, and I was trying to follow my chart plot there, and I just was like running into these Sylvania blooms that I didn't think were there on the way there. And it was, the light was fading and my phone was on red. Lord. And I was just like kind of having a little mild panic attack, just trying to get back to the launch. I mean, that's like something that could happen.
It's scary.
The COVID stuff has really wreaked havoc with shipping. And as such, I haven't been able to get my team packages and boats and drives with the kick up fins. So I had my old fins, and you know, I was just bending my fins left and right. I mean, you're in 2 feet of water, and you're traveling you have a motor, and I'm traveling miles. That's another story. I'm traveling miles through the swamp, and I'm just bending my mast left and right. So I had to constantly rebend those. No motor means just your thighs are destroyed.
Yeah,
I want to know where you found 2 feet of water.
What was that?
I want to know where you found 2 feet of water.
Well, most of my fish were coming in 1.3 to 2 feet of water. But yeah, man, it was real bad. I mean, and of course, a lot less, like a half a foot of water, you know, 0.8, you know.
Jeez.
So a lot of stump knocking, a lot of slow travel, a lot of trudging around. Day three, I didn't get an identifier with my top 100 board. So I had to make some late night anxiety and some phone calls before I was able to go to sleep. It wasn't a bad thing, but one thing that was looming large each morning was the pedal to my spot. It usually required a lot of sweat and a lot of exhaustion
before you
make your first.
Yeah, I bet a few choice words
for lines in. Yeah, so I got left in the dust by a lot of the trolling motor guys. But I ground through and I was able to get four miles per hour or more for at least 25 to 30 minutes straight before I was able to start my first cast. So
wow.
There was a lot of grueling, you know, work involved in that. For sure.
Yes. Well, you got some powerful, legs there, man. Kicking that, you know, that Hobie around all the time. That's why you're breaking your fins, man. You got such powerful quads, dude, from all the
best. Most powerful muscle in my body for sure. My thighs, the rest. Skinny dad bod.
I had a 63-year-old man every morning beat me to my spot.
That was Marty Hughes. That was Marty Hughes.
Yeah, with his motor, with my motor, he beat me to the opening of the lake we were fishing to, which was 2.5 miles, pedaling every day.
Dang, that's impressive, man.
He's 63. We got to the creek, and he said, "Am I in your way?" And I said, "Buddy, you outran my motor all the way to this creek. I'm not passing you in the creek." He said, "Not bad for a 63-year-old man, huh?"
Jeez, that's inspirational right there. So, Ken, did you have anything else to add, or do you want to move on to the next topic?
Yeah, mine's a quick one. Right. It's something that I think everybody can relate to in a sense. But so I think if you've heard any of our Drew and I's podcasts before or if you talk about anything, I don't carry a lot of tackle around with me. Max 2 or 3 rods on the kayak. So I brought 4 rods to Louisiana from my house. Like, that was it. I brought 4 rods. And day 1 of practice, I broke one. Day 2 of practice, broke another one. So I'm down to 2 rods, right? Second day of the tournament, so day 2 of the tournament, broke another one. So I'm down to one rod. At this point, and two of those three rods that I broke were specific to the technique that I was using to catch fish. So day 2, after I broke that third rod, I was down to 1. I had to go back to like the ward, or like I had to sprint to Bass Pro Shop before like the check-in and all that stuff. And I went in and bought a $50 rod for Bass Pro Shop, and I put that $10 guarantee on it. So if anything happened to it, I could get like some lures or whatever. But, So I got about the $50 odd, went to the check-in, went home that night, switched my reel over, ran the line through it, tied my lure back on, went out, caught all my fish on it on day three on that new rod that I bought from Bass Pro. So, you know, going through all my equipment basically and getting down to bare bones and still being able to pull that out was that's, you know, my equipment. My equipment was what was worrying me at that time, because I kept breaking them on stupid stuff. They weren't failing in the sense of like the equipment itself was good. One time it got caught in my pants seam and snapped the end. One time I was drifting past a stump and it grabbed it and I didn't notice it and it bent it too far and snapped. And then the other one, my braid looped around my line and I went to set the hook on something and it just snapped it because my braid just did what it was supposed to do and be strong as heck, and it just cracked it. So like it was not like mechanical failure in the sense of my equipment was bad. It was just bad luck. So
yeah.
That, you know, that was like the kind of the thing that sticks out in my mind, that I was very low on equipment in that sort of thing. Yeah. I had two hooks for that, or two lures specifically for the technique that I was using. So I couldn't lose those. So I retied those a couple of times when I was in the water. So just not having resources was my big fear and issue that I had.
Yeah, no doubt, man. These events are stressful. They are. I mean, like we all laugh about it, but, and you guys know what I'm talking about. You know, I text my wife right when the pre-tournament meeting is about to begin, and I say, hey, I'm at the meeting. Life is about to get really fast for the next 3 days for me. Like, my world is about to, like, feel like a minute, you know, but it's going to be 3 days. It's insane. You don't know it until you're an angler in that situation. The KBF National Championship is the pinnacle of that feeling, because – they have events going on during the tournament we're at. Like, it's a nonstop. You got batteries to charge, because you add in the element of electricity and batteries and motors. That's more that can go wrong. That's more you got to deal with. So at Hobie, you don't have that. So it's just very stressful. The whole experience, it can be very stressful, but I wouldn't change it for the world, because it's like, it's the grind. So it's the championship. It's, so fun. It's fun. Yeah. It's fun, but it's miserable all at the same time. It's pleasure and pain. It's man.
Yeah, I was just telling somebody that the minute I stopped feeling, you know, a little bit of nerves or excitement or stress or energy like that, I mean, that might be time to really reassess kind of what I'm doing. I mean, there is an element that, like, you know, just literally makes you feel alive, you know, and gives you, you know, that's kind of special buzz and energy that's sometimes hard to recapture from like your youth. From your youth, when you very first experienced the thrill of the fish, you know, fishing or learning, and it's really, you know, kind of a neat thing that way.
Yeah,
try to make sure that I have all the time in the world to get ready. Drew was always saying, Robert, you don't have anything to do. You have nothing to do all the time ever, because I rig all, because I know I've got a 45-minute ride to my lake, so I rig my tackle on the way there, and I want to
luxurious.
I want to make sure that engulf the whole experience of the entire thing. So I want to hang out with everybody else in the house.
They're all like, you know, I was ready as soon as I got back to the house, and everybody's like, "What? Why aren't you rigged?" I was like,
"Exactly.
I don't have anything to rig.
I got all.
I only have two rods left. I have nothing to rig.
I threw a spinnerbait for freaking 9 days in a row, or 8 days in a row. So I mean,
sounds amazing.
I like to. I love the hanging out in the house with the guys, and I like. I mean. Like Dusty says, the fixer. I like helping people fix their stuff. As long as mine isn't broken, I'll deal with my stuff on the water, because I got a 45-minute motor.
Trust me, I wanted to be hanging out. 4 miles an hour. I wanted nothing more to be just chilling and hanging out. I wish my motor and my phone and like my rods. Oh my lord!
One of the weirdest things is like the twilight zone, like where the hours of like 4 to 8 o'clock go. Every day after practice or after the tournament, it seems like it's 5 minutes and it's like 10:47 and you're not in bed.
Yeah. And you're like,
and you gotta wake up at like 3 o'clock and your stuff's still not ready. And it's like, really? You have to experience it to understand it.
Exactly. You have to. Now, switching to one last topic, because I know we're about an hour in. I do want to get to this topic before we end it. I want to talk about, you know, one or two things you guys can think of. Something that could be improved on the experience, because the cool thing is, you know, I really feel like, you know, Christy Hoover, Chad Hoover, Amanda Brandon, all of them, AJ, Dwayne, and John Stewart, the guys, I feel like all of our trails are confident enough in what they do and that they do a good job to accept constructive criticism without feeling like defensive. You know what I mean? I feel like they're great people. They want to put on a better trail for the anglers. That's their ultimate goal, right? Is to get more entries and make it better for us. So if you guys could recommend something to, you know, KBF for this event, you know, and before we even get into it, I want to say, I hope everyone, you know, qualifies for this event and goes to it. It's amazing. So nothing we're saying here. These are just small things we think could be improved. So definitely go to the event. It's amazing as is. So if we can help them get even better, this is our platform. This is our chance to say, you know, here's something that would have made our experience even a little bit better. You guys want me to start? Or you guys have one that's just glaring? You got to kind of like get out there.
I mean, I put all my energy into the concentration of like my plan, my game plan, and fishing. My hats are off to the people that organize these giant events that have to start planning a year in advance, have to get permits and calls and do red tape of absurd variety. The very thing I got away from in my life. So for me to nitpick and like say that this could be better and that could be better, I mean, I feel like an ass doing that. However, I mean, technically, this is a forum, this is a dialogue. We are trying to be constructive. We are trying to do things for the better, but I still feel like these are little selfish things that might be bothering me. Nevertheless, I mean, I guess I can volunteer and go first. I would love to see the extension deadline that was given on Friday for submission that was given an hour later. Apparently, with the stipulation that it was because of a few anglers that had poor service. You know, I think a lot of us had poor service there. And I know for me personally, looking back, I mean, even at the time, I didn't even like probably realize how big of a deal it was. Like in hindsight, I have like on the ride home and when I got home, there was, you talk to anybody, especially in our area, Robert can verify this. There was an afternoon bite. There was a big bite. My GoPro footage. I was getting clutch big fish at the end of the day from 1:15 to the time I had to leave. And that was the key, the time I had to leave. I couldn't stay till 3. 3's lines out. I needed every single possible cast with that buzz bait till 3 o'clock. And I know that that was when they were chomping. On day 2 and day 3, I was getting bites flying back into the creek to be able to upload. I was winging cast, power casting at 4 or 5 miles per hour, getting 18-inch fish. And I had to leave early because I had no service whatsoever. Even if I clicked upload image with reduced quality and fishing chaos, I had to get to that Wi-Fi. And I need peace of mind in that Wi-Fi. I need to have my fish in a photo album. I need to know my inches. I can't make any errors. I need to verify the catch log. I want to make sure that's all tip-top. And for me to do that, I had to leave my spot 30 minutes to like 35 minutes earlier. And that killed me every single day. And on Friday, when they announced that the extension deadline was for an hour, that would have been awesome to have heard at like noon. Or I thought that because this is often the case, coverage isn't uniform for people coming from different regions with different cell phone carriers, that I think that it, and I know it's selfish that we shouldn't have to worry about that. We should all be able to fish to the deadline and then have at least a couple hours to submit our fish. Now, I know that causes a lot of problems on the back end with judging fish and getting things ready, you know, to upload and whatnot. But I think that would be a major relief for people because, like you had said earlier a little bit, our whole sport relies on cellular data and connectivity. And for that to be an issue is part of angler responsibility. But it can also be addressed this way as it was on Friday. So I think that's something to think about in the future. Also, just to nitpick, man, a little bit. I know a lot of us were beat up. And when we got to the ceremonies on Thursday, you know, we had to be there till like 9 o'clock, maybe almost to get our boards. And, you know, I hate to complain about something like that. But really, man, I wish that we could have there could be ways to try to celebrate and have the camaraderie and, you know, and that kind of and to cap things just maybe a little more practical. But I understand that might be sort of an outlandish request based on the fact that there was great food, free food, great music. And they did try to do things as speedily as possible. But I suppose these would be my only like small complaints about, you know, that event.
Yeah. Hey, as a former tournament director, I'm telling you, it's not, and again, I feel like they're very confident. They do a good job. I think they'll appreciate this. So those are good ones for sure. And I think maybe a solution on that last one, maybe again, I'm just thinking off the cuff right here, but maybe because I agree, being there till late to be in the top 100 guys, if you're listening, you had to get a special measuring board, a catch board that you had to use and your identifier for the final day, right? The last day, which was Friday. So Thursday night they had music and food. It was awesome. But in a tournament with motors and batteries, I have two batteries I have to charge. So, and I had no way to get to my Airbnb because I'm an hour and a half away from my Airbnb. After the water, I had to go straight to this event. So I'm not able to get batteries on charge, which means if of course I ended up not using a battery and paddling kayak the last day, but you get my point. I'd have to wake up if I got home at 10 o'clock, which is or whenever I probably got home, I would have had to have set an alarm for 2 a.m. to put my different battery on charge. Yeah. Going to bed probably at 11 or 11:30, getting 2 hours of sleep, waking up to charge. It's like, I agree. Could they maybe do something like that? A party or a big celebration like that 2 days prior to the event. That way it's not the night before the first day, just 2 days prior. They have some sort of big, you know, something else happening. I don't know. I don't know if they could do it a few days before or something.
Well, I'm sure they thought things through. There's logistics of giving the top 100 their boards and identifiers. I mean, there's all types of situations and I'm sure they entertained it thoroughly, but you know, it's not a perfect world. And, and if I had to do it again that way, I would do it the same exact way because ultimately I had a great time. Yeah.
I guess the saving grace, though, is that all 100 of those people had to do this deal with the same thing.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
For
you
sure.
Know, I mean, nobody was getting home until at least after that board was handed out that night. So the end of the day, yes, was it frustrating? Did I want to be there that whole time?
Yeah,
you know, social anxieties aside, like I don't like live music; it makes me uncomfortable, like that sort of stuff. Yeah. But like, everybody was in the same situation of like not getting home till late because like everybody had to wait for their board. You know what I mean? Like it is what it is, sort of thing. Like it's part of the game at that point. Is you gotta, I guess, realize that if there's going to be those social functions during this big conglomerate of people for this national event, that if you're waiting on day three, you're going to be tired. You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, yeah. Maybe they could have given the boards and made the optional to stick around the optional. Maybe they could have given them out like a little earlier, like 7 p.m. or something. And then you, if you want to stay and keep celebrating, cool, and eat food, drink, whatever. But if not, at least you can go.
Yeah,
I don't know.
If you're on the list, grab your board. If you'd like to stay and have some food, please. If you'd like to go home and get some rest.
Yeah.
Your options. Yeah.
That might have been good. Anybody have another one they want to toss out there? I mean, one.
I have one little thing, and it's not about what happened specifically that we had to do. It's how the change happened. So like basically they introduced that we had to start recording the release videos for our fish. Fine. It wasn't hard. It actually makes a nice little break of files in your phone. So then you know where the pictures were you took beforehand stuff like that. Instead of always having to take a selfie or one of the sky or one of the spot or whatever you do for your own personal thing. It works out really nice. Just go practice it. If this is what they're going to do moving forward, anybody out there that plans on participating in a KDF event, just practice it. You take a video of your fish on the board, you pick it up, you let it go, you go back to the board, you're done. Like, it's not hard. Just make sure your pictures are good before you do it. However, my issue is with when they roll this out. Why are we adding new things at the national championship to do that are required for us to do? You've had people fishing in your trail for a year, qualifying for this event, trying to qualify for this event, trying to get themselves set up for AOI, and they've been practicing their technique when the most crucial technique that you have after catching the fish is getting a good picture of it. And and everybody has their routine that they do that. And you are requiring them to change that routine by adding in this rule during the national championship.
Like, not the most ideal time to roll out something brand new for anglers to do. But like you said, it wasn't difficult. It was well explained. There were plenty of examples. And ultimately, it was something that most people shouldn't have a problem with if they remember.
Yes, that. I don't have an issue with having to do it. That's not my point. My point is time of presentation for new rules and requirements.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. I kind of do like the rule. I mean, honestly, I think it's just – it helps us ensure that, you know, people aren't out there, you know, cheating, you know, or they can't cheat quite as easily that, you know, whatever. But anyway, no, I agree with you, Ken. That's a good point. I mean, rolling it out fresh, the NC, when we have so much else going on, so much information and schedules and stuff happening is, maybe next time they can do it earlier in the year or something, do some tests. I don't know. But, yeah, good. That's a good one. Robert, you got anything you can think of?
The only thing I have is I got a phone call on the third day at 4 o'clock that I had to take a lie detector test. And I was like, why would I have to take a lie detector test? I've not had a great tournament. And I think this stuff, I mean, I 100% agree with lie detector tests. I think they're great. I think they need to be implemented, but I don't think they need to be random. You don't just put a bunch of names in a hat and then draw guy number 79 out of 100. Needs to have a lie detector test. Separate your top 10, hit your lie detector test on the guys that matter, and leave it alone. Period. Right. I mean, I because here's the thing. I knew I was borderline the 10, and all of a sudden I get this phone call. I look at it, and it's got Chad Hoover's name, and I was like, oh, goodness. And like my heart just jumped out of my chest. I'm like, he's in his response, and it was, hey, I got some delightful news for you. And I was like, that's awesome. Like, I thought I made it. And then all of a sudden, you're my random draw for the lie detector test. And I was like, well, that's not what I thought you were going to say. But regardless of that situation, I think that lie detector tests need to be on the top guys, not the guy that finished 34th or 32nd or whatever. Don't make it random. Hit the guys at the top and then go from there. I mean, don't just randomly. Random lie detector is not going to sort out anything. It's going to just, I mean, who cares if the guy in 37th place lied?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I agree. That's a good one. That's a good one. You know, and all I have is it's got a few quick ones, but Dusty, I agree with you about the time thing. They should have let us know about that extension earlier.
Definitely.
Like, not even noon, because that like I think Ken, you said at the house, like, well, you didn't have signal at noon. You wouldn't have known you had an hour extra, like that, you know, before the tournament, because that was anglers' responsibility to know if they had signal or not. They had test tournaments going on that, you know, the pre-fishing big bass. So people had opportunities to learn their signal. So that did give some
people. That's our job.
Yeah, it's our job.
That's what's preached. Yeah, that's what's preached. It's your responsibility.
So,
yeah.
So that was, you know, if we could go back in time and fix that, I'm sure they'd prefer probably to mention it beforehand as well, because I know they probably got a little bit of a grief from that. Yeah. But you know, also the other one of the ones I thought was you guys probably didn't deal with this, but maybe you did, I don't know, but on this is more of a Fishing Chaos thing, and I talked to John who runs Fishing Chaos, and they're continually improving, so they're gonna make some improvements. But you know, you go to tournament dashboard and then you go to your entries. And there's nowhere to, once the leaderboards are shut off, there's nowhere to actually see, you know, when you've submitted, you know, whatever, 7, 8, 9, 10 fish in a day, they'll say official if they've been judged and they're official. But there's no way to see how many inches you have, which of those fish, you know, counted, and what is the tournament app showing I have? Because I know in my head, I've done the math, I know what I've got, so I know what that should reflect that. But the leaderboard's off, and I can't see that.
But
so I don't know.
Can't you go in your catch log and just do math?
You could,
well,
but
no,
that takes forever.
Yeah, exactly. You could, but you also don't know, because when you're submitting with low signal, you've got here's what happens. A lot of my fish would show up without a photo, and it'd say 17 and a half, another catch log, 17 and a half, another one 17 and a half, and then like another one 17 and a half with a photo. So I'm like, is it counting all those? Because it shouldn't be, because it doesn't know it's a duplicate. See what I'm saying? It may not know it's a duplicate. So it's like very like on Tourney X, for example, you can go in your live well or whatever. You can see your five that it's pulling as your score, and it can show your total, and then you know your total, because you know your biggest five you got, you know, it's 89 and a half, and if it says 89 and a half, you know there's no issue. So I would, you know, I think they're going to make that adjustment where you can see that even when the leaderboard's off. Now when the leaderboard's on, it's no problem. You can see which five it's pulling. Is it pulling the correct five, not duplicates? You can see that, because it actually had a duplicate on day one for me, and I had to let them know, hey, because the leaderboard stayed up on day one. So it was easy. I was like, hey, guys, that's a duplicate. Before I even get challenged, I want to let you know about it. You can take it off. So they did that. But the other thing was on that, you know, similarly with the Fishing Chaos app, it could also just show us what was the other? There's another thing. Again, I forgot. There was two things about the app. Not just how many inches you had. There's one other thing that would have been nice to see. Oh, it was whenever there is a fish that has been deducted. See, I had one that was 17 inches and it said 16. And I didn't know why. Now, this is something that I believe the KBF staff has to put in. The Fishing Chaos guys told me there's a place for them to put in. But I'm not getting the emails because, as you guys know, we were in about 10 things. So when you get an email, when you're submitting fish, you're in like 10 tournaments, like the Louisiana challenge, the monthly
receipt for each fair.
Yeah. There's like a million of them and a million emails and you can't keep up and understand. But it'd be nice if in your catch log, if it could just show you your five that it's pulling your five biggest.
I thought they do.
No, on the leaderboard, it does on the actual leaderboard. But once the leaderboard's down, there's nowhere to see it. It's tournament dashboard entries, and then it shows all the entries you've submitted.
On that date? Okay.
Yeah, so then you're trying to look, and like some of them say official, some don't, and then some might be deducted. One of them said red. It was disqualified because there was glare. But see, it's disqualified, but it didn't. There wasn't a note saying, why is this fish disqualified? I'm looking at it. The identifier's there. Everything's in the photo. And I'm like, I don't know what to do. It's still within tournament hours to submit fish, so I'm confused on what to do because there's not a note saying – what's wrong? And it puts a lot of stress because you don't know. If I knew, I would submit a better photo. Yeah. And I just had to call them, which is more stress and time, and they're getting more phone calls, and it's like, why is this fish DQ'd completely? What did I do wrong? What are you guys seeing that I'm not seeing? And they said there's a glare on your identifier, we can't fully see it. Okay, that's fine. If I would have just known that in the message on that fish, where it said DQ'd, I would have just replaced it. Same thing with a 16 incher that was really 17. I guess my hand was too close to the tail, even though not nearly as close as I and other people. I know, Robert, you had one that was right on the tail, and it wasn't.
I had a real
DQ'd at all, or it wasn't deducted at all. So I didn't know why that was deducted.
For everybody listening, you're talking to people who have been doing this for quite some time, and we still make mistakes.
Yeah,
we still submit stuff with frames or glares and stuff. So for everybody listening, make sure your picture is good before that fish is released. That's why I love to carry a net. The fish goes back in the net. Fish goes back in the net in the water, and I take at least 10 seconds, and I look for the two or three checklists on the picture. Yeah. Mouth closed, ID visible, and nothing wrong, with the fish. And
I'm even more paranoid than you, Dusty. If it's 18 plus, it gets the fish grips and the net in the water.
In my 6 years doing this weekend, I got my first fish. 6 years, I don't know how many hundreds of fish, I finally got my first one DQ'd.
Yeah.
Because I cut the fence off touching the nose. I had another picture at 16 inches, but I had a good picture at 16 and a quarter that got DQ'd because I didn't double check that one picture where the fence was touching the nose. And you could only see... I mean, I missed the nose touching the fence of the board by a hundredth of an inch.
Yeah.
But like as a couple judge, pixels. As a judge, 100 times.
I saw the picture. A couple pixels. Yep. It wasn't much.
As a judge, 100 times, I would have denied that fish if anybody in the entire country would have put it through. It didn't matter. So, So finally, I got one DQ'd. So.
The only other thing I can think of is, I think they kind of have to do it this way, but I almost wish that all these championships weren't bottled into one together in some ways. In some ways I like it, but it's kind of frustrating. I know, I'm not going to say the angler's name, but there was an angler who I talked with at Kentucky Lake, and he's like, man, I'm having the worst year ever. I haven't cast a check and Hobie and KBF, not at all. And I'm like, dude, really? And he's like, yeah. And I'm like, wow, he's such a good angler. How is that possible? But the way their point system works, it's so heavy. It's even so weighted heavily on this last event for the AOI, which is the 10 house. Yeah, which is the 10 house, right? So that this angler is in the 10 house. And I had, four top, a second, a third, a fourth, like all these like top finishes in the entire year on the KBF Trail Series. And I got whatever it was, like 29th out of 350 at this championship. It's not like I had a bad event. And I fell so far down, and it's not indicative of my actual gear. If you looked at to put the two anglers, the stats side by side on the finishes for the year, and you say which one of these is in the 10 house, there's no way in the world anyone would say that the other angler, because
Drew, clearly- I broke it down, and I didn't want to, but I had to, and I broke it down, and I would have made the 10 house by 1¾ if it was just the straight regular points throughout the whole season. Don't give points and a half to give for lack of better term, the lesser a better advantage. Mm-hmm. But if it would have been straight across the board, no matter what, the same way they did all season long, I'd have made the 10 house by 1¾.
Yeah. Yeah, so, I mean, it's angler of the year.
Is it weighted like that to encourage participation?
I don't understand why it's weighted like
that. No, I don't, because people would still participate. This is a national championship. They would still go there for that purse and that experience. Like, you don't need to draw people there reason.
What do you think's the mentality behind such a heavy weight?
I think
it's because of history, because clubs used to do it all the time.
And it's the national championship. Nobody ever had a reason. It's the championships you feel like it should be, but Bassmaster and none of the other series do anything like that. The AOY is strictly all the regular season events, and that's it, all weighted the same. That's angler of the year, not angler of the national championship weekend who had a good – I mean, dude, if you got in the top 10 in that tournament with 900 points for a win as opposed to 600 in the regular season with 9-point decrements, you could move up so freaking much. To me, it's just not the best reflection of the angler of the year. So actually, now you're still usually getting a lot of good anglers and top names. I'm not saying you can just be.
You are for sure.
You are. But I just think that would be something that would be closer to what the angler of the year is.
I mean, there is there is guys that get in there just like, what did I get into? Like, they don't even know because they.
Yeah, they didn't know that. Yeah.
Well, yeah. Because they got. So look at this. Like, I, going into the weekend, I was 103rd on the AOI list, right?
Right.
103rd. I had a good year for me, and I'm not, I had a win, and then I had a couple medium finishes, and I should be nowhere near, like, AOI status, like that sort of stuff. I went from, with my 20, well, actually, it's even worse because it was only 2 days and I had that 85-inch day two. So I dropped a little bit and had like a worse standing than I did at the end of the national championship completely.
Right.
But with that finish, even still, I jumped up to 41st place.
Yeah, one of our housemates, not going to mention names, didn't even make the 100 and he moved up 35 places.
Yeah. I jumped 60 places, over like 62 places, and I had a bad day too.
So yeah, right. I mean,
anyway, that's just something.
If it's gonna be the top 10, then let's not give an advantage to the rest of the field on the last day of the year.
Yeah, yeah, I agree.
Keep it legit right across the board. Don't change it.
Keep it even for sure. I mean, every other tournament was the same, but and maybe even make it 3 days, make the whole Trail Series Championship three days.
Sure.
It's just only going to allow the better anglers to really prove themselves. And again, it's not even, I promise I'm not saying that because it kind of hurt me. And I know you're not because it hurt you. I just feel like I understand why. I've heard people say this in the past for the national championship when it was double points. They're like, man, waited so much. So many people fell super far and without even having a horrible really event, and some people jumped up like crazy, and I was like, I didn't understand what they were saying until now that I've been put in that situation. I'm like, oh my goodness, look at my year compared to somebody else's year who's in the 10 house, and I'm like, how, it's angler of the year, how in the world are they in there and I'm not? And then you look at the points and it's like, well, that's why. So anyway,
I had two firsts and a ninth. And I got beat out by a guy that had a 7th, a 13th, and a 7th, 11th, and 13th.
Yep.
It don't make any sense.
No, not really. But, hey, anyway, we're just kind of, like Dusty said earlier, these are little things. We'd love to see them change. And I'm sure they're hopefully someone can even forward this to them. They'll listen, because I think we had some good constructive feedback, and we love the event. We can't wait for next year's already.
Absolutely.
Are they doing auto-qualifying from that? For next year,
if you end up in the top 50 or something, or top 100,
I didn't really hear anything about that.
They usually do. So usually it's in the money. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
If you're in the money, I'm almost certain you're back in the national championship for next year. Why are you thinking of just taking a break and only fishing the NC?
I was just curious.
You know what?
I go down and practice for the next 11.
Yeah, I'm gonna live on Kentucky Lake every weekend.
yeah,
what's up with the What's up with like the lack of a public payout structure? Has a payout structure been posted for the KBF National Championships?
I don't know.
There was a chart that you had available to In Fishing Chaos that you could look at. However, there was, to my knowledge, there is no post on any final what everybody's getting.
There was not.
All right.
That's interesting.
Hopefully we'll get that soon and we can see how many
fun.
Yeah, how many fantasy points we're going to get for Guillermo and Cody and those guys. All right, well, unless you want to tell your story, Dusty, we can wrap this up.
It's so out of context. I mean, it's like you almost kind of like have to be
there. Yeah, all right. We'll we're going to save it for another time because I know you're going to be back on.
Yeah. And everybody's listening. Maybe you'll get lucky enough if you run into Dusty, he'll tell you in person.
It's a good. I told my wife the story, and she thought it was the funniest thing like ever. She's dying laughing.
What you should really do is get Matt Scotch to tell it because he was the one that was like witnessing it. But
that's true.
But I can totally see what he might have heard and saw if I was him. You know, with what I was saying and doing. I mean, it must have just been wild.
All right, we'll leave it a mystery. I'm gonna call you later. We'll get Matt Scotch on.
Did you uninstall any ceiling fans in your house?
What?
Did you uninstall any ceiling fans in your house?
No, ask Drew if he uninstalled any ceiling fans in his house.
Why?
I'm just curious.
Rod tip havoc in the house.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, man. All right. Well, before we get completely off the rails, we'll wrap this up. But I appreciate you guys coming on, chatting about the NC. Thanks again to KBF and all your staff. You guys are awesome. Amanda did, she responded to me. She had a lot going on.
When I had questions,
she responded.
They crushed it, man. They absolutely crushed it. You know, we, like Dusty said and Drew reiterated, we had our gripes, and there's always going to be minor things for each individual person.
Hey, I think this is the first national championship in history that there wasn't a big measure in glitch.
That's true. That's true. I mean, it did all function and work, and it did the team thing alongside of it. You only had to submit fish once for all the everything. Yep. It did work. So
I think they did a fantastic job.
They crushed it, man. I couldn't imagine running something like that, like being part of that team. Like
it's hard enough for me to fish three days clean, let alone run an event like that.
Exactly.
Me too, clearly. So anyway, all right, guys. Thanks again. I'm not used to doing this. Jimmy does this, so I guess there's got to be – is there a closing to this? I don't know.
It's probably next –
day.
I don't see it. I don't see any closing.
Closer.
Here we go. Closer.
There it is. It's called the closer. It's the closer.
Of course. We got the fixer. Now we got the closer.
That's right. The fixer, the closer. And the
fixing the closer, guys.
And yeah. I'm the breaker. I break things. So the fixer, the closer, the breaker, and Ken, I don't know if you're – what you are. Dr. Noisewater Ken. Still? I don't it's know. Dr. Just kidding. All right, guys. We'll catch you later. Thanks again for tuning in.
How about that?
That's right. Facilitator. All right, guys. Catch you later. Here we go. We'll exit out.
All right, see you.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode on Paddle and Fin. Don't forget to go check out our website at paddlenfin.com. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel at Paddle and Fin. If you got a question, comment, want to hear from a future guest on a future episode, feel free to email us at paddlenfin@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Paddle and Fin on Facebook and Instagram. Shout out to our show supporters, Angler, the Angler Button, and app just makes for a better time on the water and creates a virtual logbook for every fishing outing out on the water. Shout out to Rocktown Adventures, located in Northern Illinois, for all your kayaking, camping, and hiking needs. Shout out to Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com.
Yeah.